This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Planting season has begun in the Cooley region, but Wisconsin farmers are still waiting to see whether this year will bring more profitable prices for dairy corn and other commodities. Joining us today to talk about the state of agriculture in the region are Bill Halfman, Monroe County UW Extension Specialist, Darren Von Ruden, President of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and Ty Martin, Vice President of Credit Delivery at Badgerland Financial. And I just want to start off by, kind of going around and talking about what you guys think are the biggest issues in agriculture right now. So, Darren, do we want to start with you?
Sure, I can go ahead. I think the biggest issue that farmers are facing right now is price for pretty much all commodities, corn, soybeans, small grains, your dairy products, or dairy milk prices are at levels that farmers aren't going to be able to sustain. And that has a trickle-down effect. So implement dealers are feeling the pinch. Your local supply outlets are not seeing the purchases of seeds and fertilizers that they were expecting. So, it has that effect on the whole community.
And Bill, what are you thinking are the biggest issues facing farmers in this region?
Darren summarized it very well. Right now we're kind of in a very sour ag economy with all of the commodities or all the products that we grow in the area kind of in a tougher situation as far as prices. And that just doesn't make for, a good situation at this point in time.
And Ty, you work in the more of the financial industry of the ag world. What are you seeing as the biggest issues?
Moving forward, really most of the farms that come and talk to us are in a situation due to the fact that we have those lower prices, due to the fact that they just don't have a lot of cash. So a lot more of the farms that maybe in the past didn't need to borrow an operating loan, maybe they were able to handle their inputs with cash itself, are having to come to us and do that. That's not unanticipated. That's something that we experience on a pretty regular basis in agriculture, the ups and downs, and sometimes those downs feel really bad, and the ups typically, farms in general tend to to look at those ups and probably not necessarily, let everybody even, we don't like to publicize our positives, and we sure, at the end of the day, can really feel it when the negatives hit us.
What are the borrowing trends right now? I mean, are people kind of being conservative and cutting back because of kind of low prices, or are they just kind of borrowing and hoping to kind of get through?
No, the trickle-down effect that Darren talked about earlier is definitely happening. All of our equipment dealers and the financing that goes through there are seeing, sort of major downturns. And really, the input financing is the biggest piece that most people are coming to us for. There are different levels. People that, maybe possibly weren't servicing a lot of debt to begin with might be in a different position than somebody who just in the last 5 years did a major expansion or did something where they borrowed out a fair amount of funds. Having to really look at each farm and each of their situations, we could have something as simple as they really do just need an additional operating to be able to get them through the year. It could be somewhere in the middle where we are needing to take some of the existing debt that they have, maybe term it out over a longer term, or possibly just restructure some of the debt. And then there are farms that have to sort of look at, or maybe things haven't been going well even through the good times, and they had some struggles. And at the end of the day, they're going to have to make some tough decisions here moving forward. And I think it depends on each farm, sort of where you're sitting at. And the truth is, as long as you have a good team of people around you that can advise you on how to move forward, obviously extension being a big part of that, I think you can get some good, smart people at the table and be able to find a way to move forward with the vast majority of farms.
And we've been talking about how all commodities right now are kind of facing some low prices, but the dairy industry in particular is something that's important to Wisconsin. And just a few years ago, dairy prices were high and the global market was booming. But, in the past year or so, we've kind of seen milk prices plummet and producers have really taken a hit. Darren, can you talk a little bit about what happened to the dairy market? Why are we seeing such low prices right now?
That's probably a combination of more of a perfect storm type situation. U.S. dollar is high right now. World markets, especially the Chinese market, which we send product to, but not a large amount of it, is really struggling right now, so they're not buying as much dairy in that country as they normally do, which means the countries that are normally sent into that market are sending those products into the U.S. market. And so with that glut of extra imports coming in, U.S. not being able to export as much as they used to, it means that there's more product on the shelves here in the U.S. and in storage, which sends a signal to the processing part of the dairy industry saying that, oh, we got too much milk, so we need to lower our prices to hopefully not get as much milk in.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, has this had a specific impact in Wisconsin that we've seen?
Yeah, we're looking at, you know, our market channels right now going into the processing industry at this time of year, especially is what we call the flush season, which means it's most of the months, April, May, June, is usually when we have our highest production. And so the processing facilities that we have in the state here are actually full right now on a daily basis. So they're having to find markets outside of the upper Midwest to send that excess milk, and which means they're going to be getting a lower price. And then the other obstacle there that has happened a little bit in the past year is there just is no market for that milk. So there's actually tanker loads of milk that are being put back in fields or put into manure systems to because there just isn't processing capacity for that milk.
Mm-hmm. And Bill, are we expecting any relief for producers in the near future? I mean, are things turning around or?
A lot of the ag economists that review these things very closely and look at them, you know, they talk about the fact that ag in general has come off about a 7-year really good run where prices are pretty good, and by and large most commodities are profitable for most of that time. Some of them had some ups and downs during that time, but so they're seeing, at least at this point in time, that it's going to be a tighter situation for a while. As Darren mentioned, the strong U.S. dollar is a big part of it, because, you know, domestically we can only consume so much of our ag products, and so we need to be able to export things to foreign countries. And when the foreign countries get a lot for their dollar, when our currency isn't quite as strong, then we have a lot more ag exports. However, right now we don't compete very well because the value of our currency is so high, and so those foreign countries with limited money are going to look to where can they get the best value for their dollar, just like any of us do when we go grocery shopping or buy anything. And right now that's not us for most of these, and that's a big part of what kind of runs the prices for a lot of commodities.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the state of agriculture in the Cooley region. How have low prices affected farmers, and what do these trends mean for the future of the industry? Joining us are Bill Halfman, Monroe County UW Extension educator, Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and Ty Martin, vice president of credit delivery at Badgerland Financial. And so we've been talking about, you know, dairy prices, but grain is another big industry in Wisconsin. And, you know, those prices haven't been doing so well either. you know, Bill, can you talk a little bit about what trends we've been seeing in that market as well?
Well, in the last handful of years or so, we've had some pretty interesting situations happen. And, if we look back to 2012 when we had the drought, we had one of the lowest yields nationwide, and demand was high, and prices were good, and that raised prices really high, and it took a few years to recover from that, getting kind of our reserve stocks built back up. And of course, you know, the same thing with dairy products is also affecting grain products with the strong currency right now for our country, which is kind of squashing the export market for those. And in the last couple of years, we've had, you know, really outstanding, excellent yields, and we've really built back up our stocks. And then we look at things like crude oil prices and some of those things that can influence what the ethanol is worth. And so there's a lot of factors that it's not just, we can't put our finger on just one thing. There's a lot of pieces to the puzzle that are influencing, what the prices are. But they're definitely, you know, a lot lower than they were in the last few years. And again, it looks like they're going to be there for a while. You know, we hate to wish a weather disaster on anybody, but that would be probably the one thing that would fix them the fastest or raise them up, at least for those people that have grain to sell, you know. But if you're the one right in the middle of the weather disaster, that's pretty lousy. Now you get a couple strikes against you.
Yeah. And, you know, is this a trend we're seeing outside of Wisconsin, too? I mean, are other states in the Midwest kind of experiencing the same thing?
Yeah, you know, we're looking at, you know, we talk a lot of times about we're in a global economy right now, you know, and the obvious one there is the strength of the dollar. But most of the things that affect Wisconsin also affect most of the rest of the United States as well, and certainly our neighboring states here in the upper Midwest. You know, and of course, when we get weather events, then maybe more specific to the detriment of a certain particular area, but, you know, then the other parts of the country would see some relief if we're in a situation like we are now. But again, you know, nobody wants to wish any kind of bad weather on anybody. That's not what you want.
You know, and Bill, you've mentioned that, you know, it's really a global market for a lot of these, you know, commodities, that farming isn't really just looking at the United States. And, you know, Ty, how does that come into play when farmers are thinking about their operations?
Well, one of the big things that happens with most of the operations that I see, or with the farms that I see, is they really have enterprises, a lot of them do, that they're a little bit diversified. So in the past, if your milking operation wasn't doing very well and you were selling X amount of grain in the market, sometimes one can make up for the other. Obviously, with everything sort of being down as a whole, you see issues. But just talking specifically about Southwest Wisconsin or Southern Wisconsin, there are things that we have here, diversification within the area, that you don't see in central Illinois or central Iowa, which is really primarily gone to pretty much all grain or one type of commodity that they're growing. You know, around here you can drive not too terrible far and you can find cranberries, you can find potatoes, you can find, you know, really the grain and the dairy, and you can find dairy at many different levels. Obviously, in the, you know, you've got Organic Valley, which is relatively close to here as well, which is, you know, largest organic cooperative, I believe, in the nation. So having those different pieces, having that diversification is something that, while, you know, at the boom times when grain is just going, you know, really big, you know, the rest of those plain state areas really benefit from that. And people go, well, why isn't Wisconsin agriculture growing as much? These are the times where, as a whole, you know, having that diversification is nice to have. So, you know, as far as our area, which is southern Wisconsin, we're happy to have that diversification. And, you know, honestly, it's sort of fun working with all those different kinds of farms.
Yeah. And Darren, you know, why do you think farmers in this region embrace that diversification?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the topography and the landscape that we see around here. It breeds itself more to diversification than, you know, the flatter fields of North and South Dakota, Iowa, and Illinois. It's a lot easier to do the large field mono agriculture type practices that they use there. And some of it might just be the heritage that we see a lot of German, Scandinavian countries that are a big part of the makeup of our communities learn that type of agriculture from the foreign or from their homelands. And so it just keeps getting passed down from generation to generation, and it's you know, a real asset to the communities to have that diversification.
And, you know, Bill mentioned earlier that, you know, we're coming off a couple years of really great ag prices, and so, you know, it might be not as profitable in the next coming years. Ty, is this something that, you know, is just kind of like a cycle? I mean, that just kind of happens, that you see, you know, years of really great prices followed by years of, you know, not so great?
There are certain markets in particular that, you know, you may see 5 years of downturn and only 2 years of upturn. And a lot of that just, you know, the reason that these farms are able to survive is because, you know, a lot of them are very good at being able to, you know, when they get into tougher times, sort of buckle down, sort of limit some of that capital spending, maybe not necessarily follow, you know, the person in town that's running a business probably has a 5-year business plan. and they're probably following that business plan to the T, because at the end of the day, they're not necessarily beholden to a commodity market. And these farms over the years have learned how to survive in these types of markets where you do see downturns for a significant period of time. Obviously, the last time that we've felt a really significant downturn would have been in the 80s. Would have been that time frame, and we even saw a significant, you know, value in people's assets, which, you know, we've got two different things on the lending side that we're typically looking at. And, you know, one of them is their cash flow. You know, can we make it now, today, this month, this week, this year? And then we're also looking at, well, where's your equity, and is it heading in the right direction, and are you getting to the point where, you know, over the long haul, you know, when you're looking at that long-term scenario, you know, where are you going to be 10 years from now, 20 years from now? What do you want to do? And we get into a lot of those discussions. You start talking to lots of different people in the industry when it comes to, you know, a lot of the farm transition. We could probably talk about, you know, right now the average age of a farmer and the fact that a lot of them are going to be trying to transition, and what will that next generation look like, and how do they want to structure their farms, and do they want to be more of one commodity or the other? Where do their strengths lie in their management as well?
That's Ty Martin, Vice President of Credit Delivery for Badgerland Financial, here with us today to talk about the climate for farmers in western Wisconsin and beyond. Also joining the conversation are Bill Halfman, Monroe County UW Extension Specialist, and Darren Von Ruden, President of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Ty, it's interesting that you bring up, you know, a lot of farmers are getting older. I think the average age of the Wisconsin farmer is almost 60 years old. What does that mean for the industry?
For the industry as a whole, it just means that change is coming. We've always had change in the past. We'll have change moving forward in the future. These days, there are some additional challenges, especially if you're, say, in a high land value area, where if you're in a high land value area and the value of that ground is above really where the agriculture itself can actually pay back the debt that you might hypothetically incur on that ground, it becomes very difficult for a newer beginning farmer to get started. But at the end of the day, you also want that older generation to be able to benefit from the fact that that equity or that value of their property has gone up. And so it's always a balancing act between trying to figure out, how do I keep this farm moving on into the future, and how do I also basically, you know, get from this farm my livelihood moving into retirement and those kind of things. And the biggest thing I can suggest is there are lots of people that you can involve in those conversations. It's typically lenders like myself, it's typically attorneys, it's typically extension specialists that sort of might specialize in those type of transitions. But in general, I see a lot of the farms that we work with figuring out how they want it to sort of look into the future, but it takes a lot of conversations. There's an awful lot of meetings and family meetings and sort of understanding sort of the position and sort of what everybody really wants moving forward. Because once you define that, you can really make good decisions.
And Darren, how do you think the current kind of climate for agriculture has affected, you know, younger generations who are really thinking of kind of committing to the industry?
Well, you know, most folks that want to get into it, they will find a way. Most of them see that the cycle effect that's happening will, you know, eventually allow for a few good years and then maybe be able to sustain the current production practices. So, you know, it's just a matter of the attitude of the person that's trying to get in. If they got a positive attitude that are always looking forward to the future, things will work out for them. If they, you know, get down in the doldrums in a hurry, tough years like this year can really make a difference.
And so, Bill, you know, we've been talking about, you know, younger farmers kind of getting into the industry and thinking about that transition. You know, as an educator, as someone who is available to the community, you know, what are you mostly talking to people about? You know, as far what kind of information and resources are they coming to you right now?
Oh boy, well, I'm kind of a generalist, and so I get all kinds of questions. But as far as, you know, kind of the very common questions this spring, having a fair amount of discussions with farmers looking at inputs. You know, what do you think about certain inputs? You know, should I put those on this year or not put them on this year as far as crops go? And yesterday I was visiting with a farmer about where to get this best utilization for some of his fertilizer dollars, on a variety of those kinds of things. And and we generally also do work with a lot of farm families that are looking at bringing the next generation into the farm. And I know in our area that there's a pretty good number of folks that, you know, with as good as ag was over the last 7 years, there's been a lot of younger folks now working with mom and dad, where back when we went through the crisis in the 80s, and for a lot of folks that was quite a while ago and may not remember it, but, you know, a lot of farm families at that point in time didn't want their kids coming back to the farm. They were discouraging it because it was a very difficult situation. But, you know, I think this time is it's not the same as then. And, as long as these folks have a good plan and they can work with their plan and flex with their plan, I think that, they're going to be able to make it through. And I know we are seeing some more new, younger faces at workshops and things, where for a while there, you know, I was up in front of the group and most everybody there was like my dad's age. And now we're seeing some younger folks that are starting to attend these workshops because they're now the next generation coming on. So it's a nice thing to see.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, you know, inputs and kind of getting that equation right. And, you know, I imagine in farming there are a lot of variables. And, I imagine it can also kind of be a scary thing that if you get kind of one piece of the equation wrong, that could be a costly mistake. How do you kind of weigh that, especially in times where money might be tight?
Well, I mean, we rely on our, UW and other university research that has examined these different products and, fertilizer rates and different things like that to know that if we follow these recommendations that have research to back them up, that's, the research conducted by somebody that only wants to know what the output is and isn't worried about making a nickel off of selling them, then we have good confidence that, this is the way to hedge your bet, so to speak, to where to spend your money. And we can look at the inputs that, have the greatest influence on you and say, make sure you cover these bases first. Just as a for instance with growing crops. We always encourage people to have a current soil test that tells you what your soil conditions are like. And then we can base informed decisions off of that soil test to know where we're going to get our best return for our money on our fertilizer dollar.
Mm-hmm. And Ty, how accessible is funding for farmers right now? Whether that's through, lending or in, a bank or like you guys, or maybe it's through other, grants and other programs.
Funding for most farms at this point, there's as many options as there's ever been. You look at a cooperative like ours is out there. There's the banking industry that is out there. There is FSA financing that is out there. There are other institutions that are trying to, best, especially in the worlds of, maybe value-added agriculture or organic agriculture or people who are looking to invest in those type of arenas. Really even almost private investors as well. So funding is there. I think the biggest thing is really trying to put down on paper what are we trying to do, and also how are we going to pay for it? Having that cash flow laid out, talking about those inputs, and then even going a little bit further is once you figured out what it's going to cost you, what your income might be, also trying to figure out, well, there's some variables in there, and how do we take as much risk out of that as possible? So risk mitigation tools like crop insurance and some of the new stuff they've done on livestock, LGM insurance, things of that nature, where you can actually take a little bit of the risk out of the game, or honestly marketing your products as well. Doing some marketing of your milk, doing some marketing of your grain, maybe even, trying to figure out what you've got. A lot of people worry about that because they see then the market maybe jump a little bit, but I contracted below the market, and they look at that as money out of their pocket. As a lender, when we look at that, we look at, okay, did you contract at a price that was profitable for your farm? And at the end of the day, if that's what you did and you were able to lock some of that in to take some of that risk out of the equation, then that is a wonderful thing, really, for the farm moving forward. So I would encourage people to try to take a look at the situation that way. Once you've put everything together, you have good numbers, making sure that you look at, okay, I've put it together, how do I take as much risk out of it as possible? You can never take it all out, okay? So don't think I'm not going down that path, so.
And for, you know, obviously you guys specialize in the ag industry, but, you know, for more traditional banks, you know, are farmers a good risk right now for loans?
Well, at the end of the day, most farms that you work with, land values, while they have been pretty stable here recently, because we've seen a lot of appreciation of those values, there is a lot of equity. There is a lot of collateral that there is out in the market. So from a risk standpoint to the lender, it all depends on the type of lender. If they're really just putting a loan out there and making sure they're secured, probably not an issue. Somebody like us, who's a cooperative, who've been around, you know, we actually are celebrating our 100th year this year. We really do focus in on that cash flow and making sure that the farm's heading in the right direction and making sure the profitability's there, just simply because we really want those farms to be successful over the long haul, truly.
Mm-hmm. And how are interest rates right now for those kind of farm loans? You know, what are the trends in for interest rates?
They're at historic lows. Have been for a long time now. I have been telling people for years, and I've been wrong, of course, that eventually they're going to go up. They've only got one way to go. But they have stayed extraordinarily low for an extraordinarily long period of time. Now, you know, like I've probably been coaching for the last couple of years, is still a great time that if you are maybe taking a little bit more risk with the farmer, maybe doing an expansion or something of that nature, seriously consider locking out long-term, doing a long-term fixed product of some kind so that you can take some of that interest rate rise risk out of the equation, especially if we do see an extended downturn in the industry to, say, another 3 or 4 or 5 years.
And Bill, you were shaking your head as he was talking about those low interest rates. I mean, what does that mean for farmers right now?
Well, it's a good thing, you know, because as we look at cash flows and paying the bills and things like that, if you can get a low interest rate, just like it is for us if we go buy a car or a house or anything else, you know, for our non-farming audience, that's always a positive thing because it helps them reduce their total overall cost of purchasing whatever item that is to make it work better on and be able to handle more changes in the income. So yeah, those are all good things. But really the important thing is that, you know, folks need to know what their own costs of production are, what their own expenses are. You know, a lot of times we'll talk about, oh, what's the average cost of production? But if you sit back and look at some of the databases that are from several farms put in there, and you can, and some of the instruments that are online from some of the other universities, you can go in there and sort things out and look at the highs and the lows, and you'll see a huge range and what everybody's different costs of production are, both direct costs and overhead costs, depending on, you know, a variety of things, you know, maybe when they purchase things, how much debt they have, what their interest payments are, are they maximizing the use of their overhead items and things like that. So it's you know, to make informed decisions, folks need to know what their own costs are and not worry about so much what the average is, other than maybe to look at that and find out, am I above average or below average, or how do I compete with, you know, the industry on an average.
Can I just say amen to that?
Bill Halfman, Monroe County UW Extension educator, is here with us today to talk about the current state of agriculture in western Wisconsin and what farmers are expecting for the coming season. Also here with us today are Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and Ty Martin, vice president of credit delivery for Badgerland Financial. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on agriculture in the Cooley region. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the state of agriculture in Wisconsin. As farmers are hard at work preparing for another planting season, some question whether the dairy and grain industry will be more profitable for producers in the coming year. And joining us today to talk about how local farmers are faring a tough market are Bill Halfman, Monroe County UW Extension Specialist, Darren Von Ruden, President of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and Ty Martin, Vice President of Credit Delivery for Badger Land Financial. And Darren, I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, we've been kind of discussing how farmers really have to, you know, have a plan for and really think about the future for when times are tough, like right now. You know, what are farmers really taking into account and kind of anticipating when times are good for seasons like this?
There's, you know, as was mentioned earlier by both Bill and Ty, the input costs, you know, those are probably the biggest thing that farmers need to look at on a yearly basis. And so years like this year and probably even next year too, we're going to try to look at all of our inputs and find ways that we can lessen that cost. And that might mean buying different seed, different fertilizers, even working with a different supplier. Sometimes you'll see a $5 to $10 per bag of seed corn price difference between two different suppliers in the same community once in a while. And so that means farmers, you know, move to somebody that they might not feel comfortable with, but when you're looking at the bottom dollar, you have to make those decisions based on what's going on your farm.
Mm-hmm. You know, and we've been talking about how the current kind of climate has affected, you know, new farmers and people thinking about getting into the industry. But, you know, we haven't really talked about how the current climate might be affecting seasoned farmers, people who've been doing this for a long time. You know, Darren, how do you think that, you know, it's been really impacting those kinds of farmers?
Well, I know last week we hosted 3 days worth of meetings specifically to the dairy price situation. And a lot of the members that were there were older farmers, and we're just, you know, talking about, you know, if we didn't have some good years, it'd really be tough this year. But they're also looking ahead to what the next 2 to 3 years might look like. And there's, you know, quite a bit of concern, because if that pay price isn't high enough to cover your cost, sooner or later you have to start cutting back on something. And if that means protein or feed additives for the cows, they end up producing less, which means that you actually have less money coming in. And then that's a scare for the banker, a scare for the local producer or processors that you're working with, because they, you know, are kind of counting on so much of the product that you produce coming in. So, you know, it all has a trickle-down effect, like I mentioned earlier, too. If pay prices stay low for too long, it'll affect the whole community eventually.
Mm-hmm. And Ty, you've mentioned several times organics and other movements in agriculture, you know, that are different than just the traditional farmer. You know, how has that really affected agriculture as a whole in this region?
It's really had to, we've had as a lender, we had to stay on our toes. You know, when someone's talking about taking their dairy farm and doing a value-added product like an ice cream, or they're looking at, you know, working with a cooperative to, you know, do something special, whether it's kosher or it's something along those lines, we truly have to dig in and we have to see, okay, what is this? You know, on the face of a lot of those things, it looks good, but sometimes the investments you have to make that change aren't really worth that, you know, you don't get the return on investment that you might want to see or you might want to get. But they really can help to especially mitigate a lot of, you know, a general downturn in commodity prices. So we've seen more and more farms that look at that kind of thing and consider that in our area. And then, you know, you talked a little bit about the older generation. A lot of them are also thinking about, you know, When do I want to exit, and how do I want to exit? You know, not everybody wants to, you know, be milking cows when they're 90 years old. Some guys do too, and amen to them. But you know, at the end of the day, we also try to help those folks try to make smart decisions moving forward too.
Mm-hmm. And Bill, how do you help a farmer make kind of a graceful exit from the business? You know, what does that look like?
Well, biggest thing that we do is sit down with them when they come to ask us about that. We talk about, first we talk about what are their goals and objectives. You know, how would they like to see their lives move on from here to whatever the next stage in their life is. And then we kind of help them lay out options and kind of show them, you know, what the different options are. In our part of the country, you know, in the southwest Wisconsin, we see a lot of folks that they maybe don't want to milk cows anymore because they're in their 60s or whatever, and you know, they're kind of looking to transition out, and there's a lot of different options that they can do. But one of the more common ones is that maybe they'll transition to raising replacement heifers for somebody else, or doing beef cattle, or feeding the out steers, because, you know, they don't have to milk those twice a day. We still have to take care of them and feed them and whatnot. But it kind of fits in with a lot of them. You know, they talk about one of the biggest concerns we hear from a lot of them is, I still want to have a reason to get out of bed in the morning. You know, and they know that if they don't have something to do, they could easily slip into sitting around too much, and they don't want to do that. And they, you know, it's good that they recognize the fact that they need something to keep them busy and whatnot, but not necessarily the same level of work that, you know, maybe they have with the dairy cows. So those are some common things that folks do. And sometimes, you know, they have a younger farmer that maybe is looking to get started, and sometimes they'll rent the barn out to them or different things like that. But it's not uncommon for folks, when they know that they don't want to milk cows anymore, they still want to live out on the farm. And I mean, that's home to them, and we certainly understand that. And so we work with them to look at options of what they could do, and kind of, you know, give them the information and let them make the informed decision what they feel like is best for them.
And, you know, I've been hearing more and more about apprenticeships in agriculture, and how that's also helping make the transition, you know, whether that's with someone, you know, from the family or outside the family, bringing a younger person on to help make that transition. You know, what does that mean for the industry and for this region?
Well, it's a good opportunity for, you know, both established farm that's looking to kind of transition out, and somebody that wants to come in. I mean, it helps pair up folks, and so the new farmers can, you know, kind of get a lot of ideas and wisdom from the experienced folks. And generally speaking, it's a lower cost way for the new person to get started in at first and find out if they really like it. And then down the road, then there's some ways that they can, you know, work towards maybe getting ownership and buying the farm or whatever from there. So it's, you know, it's certainly a viable option for certain operations.
And Darren, are you seeing more farmers in this area kind of embrace the idea of apprenticeships and bringing on an apprentice?
Yes, you know, it's actually a good thing, you know, if there isn't family members that want to take over mom and dad's farm, to get the next generation involved in the farm, and because we all need food and we all eat, and so we need to keep these farms as productive as possible. And the apprenticeship idea is something that seems to be taking off a little bit more. You're hearing more and more every day of another retiring farmer that wants to get somebody involved in the operation, and through WTC and even the UW system, there's those contacts are being made between the retiring farmers and an apprentice.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the state of agriculture in the Coulee region, how low prices have affected farmers, and what these trends mean for the future of the industry. Joining us are Bill Hoffman, Monroe County UW Extension Educator, Darren Von Ruden, President of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and Ty Martin, Vice President of Credit Delivery for Badger Land Financial. And Darren, I want to jump back to talking about organics and value-added products, and just kind of some of the newer trends that we're seeing in agriculture. You know, are you seeing more farmers kind of embracing those trends in this region?
Yes, I talked to a neighbor yesterday that is in the transitioning mode to organics, which I, you know, 5 years ago he said he'd never even think about it, but with low milk prices where they're at now, and he figures he still has enough good years left in him to make the transition and be a part of the organic system for a while. And then he's also looking down the road there, too. It seems like the organic prices have been pretty stable and high enough to make a living on. And with no kids coming back to the farm, he's hoping, too, that maybe someday there could possibly be an apprentice there or sell it to somebody else that wants to stay in the organic business. So you're seeing some of that. Another growing industry here in the state is probably the largest farmer growth that we're seeing is the community-supported agriculture movement where folks buy 5 or 10 acres and grow fruits and vegetables, nut trees, things like that, and sell either local markets or the CSA movement. Actually, you have a customer base that pays you ahead of the season, so then you have your input costs that you know, and you have your profit margin built into that. So at the beginning of the year, you already know that you make a profit. The only issue there is if Mother Nature decides to throw a wrench in there and give you a drought or too much rain so that you can't get your goods off the field. It's probably the biggest worry for that group.
Darren was talking about the transition to organics, and I know that can be kind of a financially scary thing. Ty, how do you guys help farmers who are thinking about making that transition?
If you're going to do a transition like that, as far as typically the lender is concerned, having a true written out plan on exactly how that's going to happen is something that's important. At the end of the day, being able to sort of show what you're going to have in those intermediate years where maybe you're not yet to getting the actual organic price, but yeah, you're starting to adopt those organic practices. If you do see a reduction in production, can you withstand that? Do you have the working capital? Do you have the cash? Have you structured your debt in a way that you can get through those what you're going to plan to be leaner years, and then get to the point where you're completely certified and you're getting the price that you know you're going to be able to get. The organic demand at this point has enough history behind it, and sort of the market as a whole continues to grow. So that market isn't as new as maybe it once was. And so the nice part is we have a little more history. We have a little more things that we can look at to show moving forward that this industry is not going anywhere. It's not a fly by night. This isn't something that's going to go away in a heartbeat. In fact, we see really at this point nothing but growth in that market. The real question is will we have enough supply to be able to meet the market demand? But again, at the end of the day, we do have to put that pencil to paper. We have to put the numbers down and be able to make it all work for them.
And Bill, how have recent advances in farming technology affected kind of the industry? I mean, has there been anything that's really kind of improved farming for the producers in this area?
Oh boy, yeah, that's a
loaded question.
We could talk all day about just that. we see all kinds of different things. I mean, we have marketing opportunities we didn't have before that are staying, like organic and the CSAs and the local grown interest, where we've got more and more folks that are wanting to know that their food came from somebody locally as opposed to not. And, so there are opportunities for folks that have the people skills and want to work with their consumers to take advantage and, kind of get into that market. And on the other side of things, where we have some of the new technology with machinery, with precision ag and being able to tailor our inputs a little better and take advantage of a variety of those kinds of things has all been, not everybody has adopted those yet, and that's fine, because in some cases maybe they aren't running over enough acres to justify the cost of it. But all of those things are showing that, where they are a good fit, and of course every operation is different. They can certainly help an operation, a farm, be more profitable and help maybe spread out their risk over a greater variety of inputs or revenue sources as opposed to all the eggs in one basket.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned marketing and how that has kind of, become something that farmers have to think about, marketing, their own products and kind of speaking directly to the consumers. And, whereas I know that before, really, the trend was kind of, you know, relying on national marketing campaigns like Got Milk or, you know, other things like that. You know, and now we're seeing more farmers really, you know, pushing their products, their farm, kind of convincing consumers why they should buy from them. You know, Darren, how has that affected, you know, farmers and what they're thinking about, you know, for each year and how they're thinking about their operations?
You know, I think it depends on the commodity, of course, but, you know, on the dairy side right now, with farmers feeling the pinch financially, they start to question whether or not some of these checkoff programs are really worth the dollars that we put into them. And so that's something that, you know, each farmer decides on their own, but, you know, to get out of that system, it can be done. It takes a little bit of paperwork to do that and talking to the right people. But in the end, you know, if we want to make sure that the consumer knows that we're producing a high-quality product, you have to be willing to do that marketing and get the word out there that we are producing that high-quality product for the consumer.
That's Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, here with us today to talk about the climate for farmers in western Wisconsin and beyond. Also joining the conversation are Bill Halfman, Monroe County UW Extension Specialist, and Ty Martin, Vice President of Credit Delivery for Badger Land Financial. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And several times, you know, we've mentioned this kind of trickle-down effect of how, you know, prices have affected farmers, but that's also affected other parts of the agriculture industry, you know, whether that's supply outlets, whether that's other industry businesses. What can they do in times of low prices?
Well, they try to do things too. You know, even a lot of the companies that, say, a dairy farmer's milk goes to, you know, they have to look at some hard numbers as well. There have been some things where they've had to, honestly, even in a down market, raise prices of their services to the dairy farmer who's having the issue even getting, you know, the commodity price that they need to make things go. So they can look at cutting costs. They may even have to look at raising some of their fees as well. That becomes difficult. It also becomes something that can cause some bad feelings between, you know, a farm and maybe where their product goes to. But I think at the end of the day, hopefully we'll be able to get through this, you know, by taking care of and look at some of the strategies that we've got and then be able to possibly come out of this and, you know, continue to grow and change and diversify.
And Bill, you know, we've been talking about kind of what's been happening over the past couple of years, but, you know, what are you predicting in the next few years, in the next 5-10 years? You know, what do you think are going to be the big issues that farmers are paying attention to?
Well, yeah, there's a very loaded question, too. I think it's safe to say that we're going to have some tougher times here for a while, and then we'll have to see. But right now, you know, weather is going to be a big issue, and just whether or not we're going to be able to get things situated to be able to survive through the tough times. And I don't know, some folks are going to be, you know, they're well positioned to handle a lot of tough times. But even everybody has a breaking point at some point in time. But you know, we've got a lot of variation out there. Policy is another thing that can have a negative effect on, or positive effect on situations, and you know, so that can affect trade and exports and things like that to help develop markets. And of course, weather is always a great unknown that, you know, we have to handle what we get handed to us and try to do the best we can and move on from there.
And Darren, I would pose the same question to you. You know, what are you expecting to be the big issues in the next 5-10 years for farmers?
I think diversification is probably one of the biggest things. You know, if we continue to go more and more towards the mono agriculture and larger farms, and I think eventually that could have a detriment to the nation's economy. And so we need to continue to have policies or adopt policies that will make sure that we have a diverse agricultural system in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And Ty, looks like you'll have the last word here. Same question to you. What are you expecting in the next 5-10 years for farmers?
I don't have a perfect crystal ball. Okay, so that doesn't exist, unfortunately. We are really, when we look at most of our farms, those farms have the ability to be able to withstand these times. They really do. The real issue moving forward is probably going to be is if we see an extended downturn in all commodity markets into 17 and 18 in particular, we could start to see some real, you know, probably restructure within the industry that'll be needed. But hopefully we don't get to that point.
We've been talking with Ty Martin, Vice President of Credit Delivery for Badger Land Financial, Bill Halfman, Monroe County UW Extension Specialist, and Darren Von Ruden, President of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, about recent trends in agriculture and what the coming year may bring for producers in western Wisconsin. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.